If you would like a free newsletter on this or other subjects, just give us a call at Christian Answers. The phone number is area code 512-218-8022. That's 512-218-8022. Or you could email us at cdebater@aol.com. That's cdebater@aol.com. Thank you. And welcome once again to our program. I'm Larry Wessels, your host. I'm the director of Christian Answers, and I want to thank you for being with us today. As you know, if you've been a regular viewer of our shows, that we cover all kinds of theological subjects. The subject we're going to cover today is one we've never covered before, and that is the subject of prison ministry. And joining me here in studio today is our very special guest, Ken Barber of Grace Outreach Ministry.
Thank you, Larry.
Ken, great to have you here, brother.
Good to be with you.
Ken's intimately involved in prison ministry, and he's going to give us a good overview of it and, of course, his own personal testimony in relation to this subject. Now, just as a lead into this program, I'd like to say that for those of you who have been regular viewers of our program, be advised that we do have free newsletters that we offer any of our viewers on different subjects. We've got one here, for instance, on spiritual warfare, one on the agony of deceit. There are false things being propagated out there in the world today. Here's another one on From Tradition to Truth, a priest's story, personal testimony. There are a wide range of subjects we deal with. And if you need information from a biblical perspective, please contact our ministry, and we'll be more than happy to send you free literature on that subject. Now, today, I'd like to focus our attention on the subject at hand, which is prison ministry. Now, as you know, you probably don't know this, but in the Bible, starting with the Old Testament, there are 47 references in the Old Testament to prison. And when you go to the New Testament, there's 43 references. The word prisoner is mentioned 13 times throughout the Bible. Prisoners, 20 times. Prisons, in the plural, 3 times. And overall, you get 83 references to the term prison, prisoners, prisons, and so forth. Prison house, you get that also, particularly in the King James Version of the Bible. And, of course, we know of many famous prisoners that are mentioned throughout the Bible. We think of Joseph as mentioned in Genesis 39, verse 20 and following, going up through the next chapter of Genesis. Think of Samson in Judges chapter 16, verses 21 through 25, where after he was captured by the Philistines, he was put in a prison house and was made to grind for them. Then one of my favorite little tiny prophets that maybe may not be so famous is Micaiah, who prophesied to Ahab that he wasn't coming back from this battle he was going to. Mentioned in 1 Kings chapter 22, verse 27. And, of course, Ahab didn't appreciate that.
Amen.
And had him thrown in jail. But it turned out he was right, as it turned out. And then you've got another little prophet that's probably not that famous, but another story I like in 2 Chronicles chapter 16, verse 10, Hananiah, who had the audacity to tell one of the Israelite kings how he had failed to do something where he could have got a better blessing from God, and because he had the audacity to tell this Israelite king, I think it was Asa, if my memory serves me correct, the king didn't like it and had him thrown into jail. Sometimes you can get thrown in jail even if you're telling the truth. As we find out, particularly about the prophet Jeremiah, definitely telling the truth, thrown in jail. Jeremiah 37, verse 21. You've got John the Baptist, another man telling the truth, thrown in jail, then later beheaded. And references such as Mark chapter 1, verse 14, chapter 6, verse 17 and following, and on through to Matthew chapter 4, verse 12, and so forth. John the Baptist. Also, the Apostle Peter is thrown in jail in Acts chapter 12, verse 3 through 11. Paul, of course, almost the whole ending of the book of Acts. It's all about him being arrested in prison, in chains, starting in Acts chapter 21, verse 33, and going throughout the end of the book, basically, shipwreck while he's still a prisoner and so forth, and many other references. But, of course, the most famous person who may not have ended, let's say, in prison, but was nevertheless arrested and was under guard and all these types of things was the Lord Jesus Christ himself. And you see here throughout all the gospel accounts, he was a prisoner of the scribes and the Pharisees and then eventually led over to the Romans to be crucified. And you get that in Mark chapter 14 and throughout all the different gospels which give the crucifixion account, particularly of his trial before Pilate and so forth. And, of course, that's not to mention places like Acts chapter 16 where you have the Philippian jailer and he's dealing there with the miraculous disappearance, you might say, of two prisoners, Paul and Silas, who are held prisoner there in the stocks. But then the Lord, by an angel, let them go out of the prison house. So we find that many of the famous people and major characters in the Bible were prisoners, were in prison. And know what it's like. And many of these men were in prison simply because they told the truth that men don't want to hear. And we find in famous references, particularly like Jesus gives in Matthew chapter 25, verses 31 through 46. He talks about how we're to visit those in prison and help those that need help and so forth. But Jesus did not forsake the care of prisoners. He specifically mentioned it in that reference in Matthew chapter 25. Now, with all this as a preface to my guest here, Ken, I'd like you to start to take over the show. You have what I think is an outstanding testimony that I want to share with the viewers at home. And also, if you could, just before you get into that tremendous testimony that you have, tell a little bit about Grace Outreach Ministry and what they do, and then let's hear that great testimony of your experience with prison.
Amen. Well, all those men that you just mentioned were in prison for the right reason. I have a pastor friend that says the problem with most preachers today is they've never been to jail, and it would probably serve most of them well if they went to jail a time or two, because it tends to open your eyes up. Now, I was in prison for the wrong reason. I was in prison for the reason prison was intended, actually. So I can't sit here and say that I was a prisoner because of what I did right. I was a prisoner because of what I did wrong. Now, I do believe the Bible teaches that God ordained the powers that be. Now, I wouldn't go as far as to say that I agree with the way our prison system necessarily is, or with the way everything's handled, but it is a fact that we know that prison is necessary, and therefore men are going to go there for wrongdoing. And it's a touchy situation. It really is, because there are those in prison who are there to be guards. There are those who are in administration, and it's necessary. So there's a fine line here between prison ministry and prison administration, which sometimes comes into conflict. You're speaking there of men who went to prison for telling the truth. Well, usually today in America, you don't go to prison for telling the truth. You will get kicked out sometimes, though, for telling the truth. So there is a fine line there. And that's a subject we'll deal with at another time. We're not here today really to criticize anything, but to share Christ and why I'm in prison ministry. God saved me. I was facing 99 years, my third time down. The ministry that I have now is not some great ministry. I don't have a big name like Mike Barber, though my name, Ken Barber, gets confused with Mike sometimes, and as a result, I get some favors, and I get doors open to me that wouldn't have been open because I'm mistaken for Mike, you know. So, but I'm an ex-offender. The difference in my ministry and maybe Mike's or Bill Glass or one of those guys is they get into prison because they have a big name and they have a concern for prisoners. My situation is the opposite. Became a Christian in jail. I was facing 99 years, my third time down. By all rights, I should have never been free. I'm not here today to make it sound like that I was unjustly treated, because I wasn't. I mean, while I was in prison, I was, you know, because there is injustice in there. But I got what I deserved, and I probably should have gotten more. So I'm here today to testify not to anything but the saving grace of God. And I have a prison ministry because I got saved in prison. I was facing 99 years, my third time down. By all standards, I grew up poor. My daddy was a drinker. I guess by world standards I wasn't poor, because we had enough money to make it. It's just my daddy had an alcohol problem that used up all of our money. I grew up not in a Christian home. I didn't grow up hearing the gospel except for when people would come to my house and take me to church. But that's what I want to share with you today. Prison ministry is a great ministry. There's a lot of things that go on in prison ministry. Some prison ministries are effective and some aren't. But the most important thing I believe about prison ministry is Christ. I was facing, like I said, 99 years. I never expected to ever be free again. I was in the Gonzales County Jail when I got saved. It's hard sometimes to share these things because we don't want anybody to think that we're trying to glorify sin. But yet, we want people to know that Christ died for sinners. I hear so often today in our system about how we need to get tough on crime. You know, we have so many things going on today that are, I believe, some injustices that are the result of that. Because, you know, we put a man in prison or we put him in jail and then we treat him like an animal. We give him an ID that says offender. So every day he gets up, he's an offender. He's talked to like an offender. He's treated like an offender. He's cursed. And some folks say, well, he deserves that. He's being punished for his crime, and that may be true. But I really don't think that you have to do that. I don't. I believe giving a man time, taking him off the streets, and putting him in prison is enough to get his attention, if you're going to get his attention. To continue to treat him that way, I believe, probably makes him worse. We have an 80% recidivism rate in the United States, straight across. And we can't blame anybody. I'm not going to try to point the finger and blame anybody, but I believe the warden at the Angola prison, that was the bloodiest prison in America, has shown that if you apply Christian principles in one of the worst settings in the world, it can change things. And that's now a model prison, a prison where most of the men will never get out. They're lifers, and that's why it was so hard to control, because if a man has nothing to lose, he'll do anything. But Warden Kane came in there and began to treat men like men, even though they've done what they've done, and present Christ to them. And it's made a difference in that prison. Now, again, I'm here to give my testimony this morning, but I want to preface those things. I want folks to know that, you know, just because you lock a man up and throw away the key, there's still a man in there, and taxpayer money's going to feed him, and there's still a situation that you're going to have to deal with that man getting out of prison one day. So my question is, do we want him coming out better than he went in, or do we just want him coming out so we can put him back in? And I believe that the way we treat a man while he's in prison will go a long way, if he's going to change, to helping him change. if you treat a little kid bad all his life, he's going to grow up bad usually. And that's probably, for the most part, what's going on today. That's why our prisons are so full, is because of their upbringing, most of them. And I think if we try to offset some of that by how we treat people, now that it's all done, we may go a lot farther in changing that person's attitude, and hope, maybe, you know, giving him a little bit of hope that, you know, well, I'm a convict, I'll always be a convict, and I'll never be able to change, and if I do, they won't treat me like I have anyway. And that's usually what goes on. That's what I've had to face. But Christ is the answer. If a man is ever going to be really changed, Christ can change them. And that's why I go to prison. That's why I give my testimony, not to glorify the past, not to glorify myself, but to say, as imperfect as I am, I'm not what I used to be. I was facing 99 years for aggravated robbery. Aggravated robbery simply means, and you know, the laws have changed over the years, but that means that when I robbed the person I did, I used a weapon, and I put him in fear of bodily harm. And so it wasn't just robbery, it was aggravated robbery. I took a knife and put it to his throat and told him that if he didn't give me what I was asking for, that I was going to hurt him. So that's aggravated robbery. Now, before I committed that crime, I've committed many crimes. I started out stealing when I was in the second or third grade. I would steal from my mother. I would steal from family members. I would steal from stores. But as I became a teenager, I began to burglarize people's houses. I would go into somebody's house in the middle of the night. I've even gone into people's houses and taken their wallet out from under their bed, or out from under their pillow with their head laying on their pillow. I've had people tell me later that they knew I was in their house, and it's just the grace of God that they didn't shoot me or blow me back out the window when I went into their house. But as time went on, I went to prison when I was 17. I went to the boys' home when I was 16 for burglary. Actually, when they declare you a juvenile delinquent, they're not convicting you and calling you a felon. They declare you a juvenile delinquent, and they declare that your parents aren't able to control you, and so they take you away and put you in a state facility, and they did that to me when I was 16. I got out of there when I was 17. And by the time, actually, I was 17, I already had a 7-year sentence. I stayed at a boys' home for 4 months, and went on a burglary spree on Christmas Eve, 1973. Burglarized all the stores in town. And anyway, making a long story short, I ended up with a 7-year sentence. Actually, I ended up with 4 years probation, 7 years probated for. I lasted about a week, and I was arrested again for burglary again and put back in jail, and my probation was violated and I went to prison. Now, I went to the Clemens unit my first time here in Texas, and that was in 1974. Prison was a lot different then. They had building tenders and turnkeys, and I've literally stood in the fields, hoeing in the fields, and watched two guards take a man between their horses and beat him almost to death. And I watched them die of heart attacks out there after being beaten because they couldn't handle the work. I've seen all that. I've watched men get beat up and down the hallways with keys by the turnkeys. I watched some vile stuff in the prison. But during that time that I was there, God took care of me. I didn't, for some miraculous reason, I didn't get involved in all that. But I did end up doing 4 years on a 7-year sentence. I got out, stayed out about 11 months, and I was back in 31 days prior to being discharged from my parole. I was violated. During that whole time, I was robbing people and doing drugs. And I committed my first actual armed robbery during that time when I was out on parole the first time. But as time went on, each time I got out, I got a little bit worse. But finally, the last time that I went on a crime spree, I had I'm cutting through a lot of things because I'm trying to get to the point of my conversion. But the last time I got out of jail, every time I would get locked up, I would hear the gospel. I prayed that sinner's prayer, Larry, so many times. They'd give me the little gospel tract, and I'd enforce spiritual laws, and they'd say, you just need to believe. You just need to exercise your faith. And I would read that, and I would try to exercise my faith, but I couldn't find any. Seriously, I kept trying to find that magic little button everybody kept talking about, because I knew I needed something. When I went to the boys' home when I was 16 years old, I remember the first day sitting in the cell there that they put us in, and picking up a little Gideon Bible, a little white Bible. For some reason, I thought, well, Matthew must be my favorite book in the Bible, so I opened it to Matthew, and I began to read the Beatitudes. And as I read the Beatitudes, it said, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the meek, blessed. And the man that it was describing there, I knew wasn't me. I knew that something was wrong in my life. I knew that I didn't like being locked up. I knew I didn't like the consequences of my sin. But as I read the Beatitudes, I realized that that's not what I wanted either. You know, I liked getting high. I liked doing the things that I was doing. I just didn't like the consequences. And so each time I got locked up, God would send somebody across my path. Matter of fact, my bunk partner there in the boys' home, name was Matthew, and he would talk to me about Jesus every day. We'd get up every day, and Matthew would talk about the second coming of Christ. But, you know, I never, you know, there was seed planted in my life, but I didn't get saved at that time. But now every time I'd get out, and every time I'd get locked up, I would hear the gospel, and I would know that I needed Christ. And I would leave there really sincere. I would leave there really knowing I need to change. And I'd get out, and I'd change for a few days, but I'd always go right back. And each time I fail, each time I'd get out, I fail. And each time I fail, I'd get a little bit worse. Each time I'd get out of jail or prison, my crimes began to become worse and worse. Until finally, the last time, a friend of mine, a guy that I met in jail, came and told me, you know, when he got out, he said, I'm going to come back and get you out. You know, they tell you that, you know, all the time. So I just took it with a grain of salt. But one day, they called my name, and I went to the door. And sure enough, Ray and his grandmother had paid my fines and got me out. And so I went to Gonzales, Texas, with the idea that I was going to change, the idea that I was going to get a job and just try to quit doing what I was doing, just get out in the country somewhere, away from drugs, away from all that, and just change. So I moved to Gonzales with Ray, and about the second week, I started getting bored. I wired from my mother, and she sent me $20. I remember going into one particular bar and asking around. That's where all the oil field workers worked, and you know, if they had the world's dumbest convict or criminals back then, I'd have probably been on that show, because that night we went in there and asked everybody in there for a job, gave them our phone numbers, address, the whole nine yards. And then I drank two beers, and I remember sitting there looking at Ray, and I said, you know, forget this, I can't do this anymore. And we were in his grandmother's truck, so I told him, Ray, we'll just leave here and go to Houston. So I saw an old man sitting there, and I went over to him and I said, you know, we need to take this truck home, and we want to come back and party. And we asked him, would you come and give me a ride over there and drop the truck off, and you can bring us back. And I'd already knew that, you know, if he said yes, I was going to rob him, take his car. But we got almost there, and I pulled my little knife out. It had a blade on it about that long. And I stuck it to his throat and told him, get out of the car, and I took his car. But that began the end for me. I'm skipping a lot of things in my life to get to this point. That began the end for me. That brought me, at that point, I had come to where I was tired of trying to change. I'd already been to prison twice. I'd already been to boys' home. I'd already been in and out of jail so many times that I couldn't even count them. And I was just tired. I prayed the sinner's prayer. I've been down the aisle of churches and prayed. I've been, matter of fact, 2 months before I went to the boys' home, I had been baptized. Had a little, you know, I got religious. Like, I got me a cross earring and put it in my ear. And, you know, the night they baptized me, I had an ounce of marijuana in my boot when they baptized me. You know, so I've been baptized. I've been squirted, been sprinkled. Matter of fact, 2 days before I got saved, a Methodist guy came in and sprinkled me. Now, sprinkling's nothing, we know that, but God kind of used that because he came back and looked at me and said, "You look different now." And I said, "Well, I don't feel different, you know." But I began to realize, well, if I'm going to be a Christian, then that means I have to be different. So anyway, that point in my life there where I robbed that old man, he was the fire marshal, Gonzalez. And from that point on, I just knew in my heart from then on there was no return. We kept that car for a few days, and it came to a point where I knew it was time to get rid of it because I figured they had an APB out on us. So I told my fall partner that we needed to get a new car. And we pulled into a President's First Lady Spa in a town here in South Texas. And this lady came out, and I picked the car there in the parking lot that I wanted, and I saw the lady come out of the First Lady, or President's First Lady Spa there, and I told my fall partner, "We'll just take her car." But I remember Larry sitting there thinking, you know, if I do this, this is it. You know, I'm trying to be modest here, but, you know, when I saw that lady, I said, you know what, I'm going to take her to my lust. Just rose up in me, and you know, I was out of control. I was out of control. Alcohol, drugs, sex, everything. I was just out of control. And I reached a point there where I made a decision that night to just forget it. I made a decision that night that I can't change. I've tried to change. My passions, my lust, my desires are still there. And I can't stop them, so I'm tired. And when I made that decision, that when I saw that lady, and I made that decision that day, I knew sitting there that I would either be on death row by the time it was over, or I would end up shooting it out with the police and dying, because I planned on taking her. I'd already told my fall partner, "We'll use her for a few days sexually, and we'll kill her and chunk her, just like a rug or something." You know, I mean, that was my thought. And we attempted it. You know, she got away, thank God. But that began their crime spree that ended probably 3 months later. I robbed a bunch of folks between Houston and Salt Lake City, Utah, and all the way back. It got to where every time I heard a helicopter, I thought it was the FBI or somebody trying to catch me. But I rode it all the way to the end. At that point, I knew it was over. I couldn't. When I got to Salt Lake City, the Mormons kind of took me in, and they made it clear that if I stayed there, that my past wouldn't even come up. But I couldn't. You know, I met a girl there, and I started thinking about a relationship, but something in my mind kept saying, "Now, as soon as you get interested in somebody, your past is going to come, and it's going to be ended." So I knew that I was going to have to go back to Texas, and I knew I was going to have to face everything that I'd done, and I finally did. And I found out my dad was dying, so I came back to Texas. I actually stole a car. We were going to steal a car from a Mormon bishop, but we decided that it probably wouldn't make it over the mountains, so we didn't take his car. But we did take a car from someone. We took a pistol, and all the way back, attempting to rob people to get gas to come back, I couldn't. Sitting in a roadside park, we were out of gas. It was 17 degrees below zero. I had that pistol, and I told Gray, you know, we're going to sit here until that man in that car gets out and goes in the bathroom, and I'll go in there and take his money. I saw two little girls in that station wagon. I saw their heads in there, and I saw him in there. And he finally went into the restroom, and I got up and went in there. Something started telling me, if you pull a gun on this man, and if he resists you, you're going to have to shoot him. And if you shoot him, then those little girls out there aren't going to have a daddy. Well, man, I never thought about that kind of stuff. I mean, I've lied, I've cheated. I've sold drugs to people. I've beat people in the head with sticks. I would have kidnapped, raped, and probably killed someone just days before that. And it didn't bother me a bit. But now all of a sudden, it seems like everything I start to do, I start thinking about the consequences. All of a sudden, I find myself unable to do the things that I had been doing with the same passion. And I didn't understand it, but I went back to the car and I told my father partner, I can't do it. I can't do this anymore. And the next morning we went and hocked a gun, bought enough gas to get back to Texas. And that began the downslope. I came back to Texas and found my dad laying on his deathbed. My hometown found out I was back, and they knew I was there, and I had warrants out for me. But they let me stay with my dad for a couple of days. They knew he was going to die, so instead of coming and arresting me right away, they let me stay with him. But when they finally came and got me, and I skipped the part where, you know, when we finally came back to Texas, we went back to Gonzales to raise grandmother's house, and they had us surrounded. The sheriff's department found out we were there. They had us surrounded. And I remember going to Ray's grandmother's bedroom. And I walked in and I looked over and saw the closet there, and something said, get in that closet. So I got in the closet. I told Ray, get in the closet. Sorry. Something told me to leave the door open just maybe this much. And the thought came to my mind, if you leave the door open, they'll see the door open and they won't open it. So I went into the closet and I had the door open about this much. And I already had a window picked out. I had my fist doubled up. And when I saw the sheriff through the crack, the sheriff himself personally came in the room, looked under the bed, he turned and he looked at the closet door. And when he looked at the door, I saw his eyes. He saw the door cracked open about that much. And I assumed that he thought, well, if they were in there, the door would be closed. So he turned around and he walked out the door. But I'd already decided if he opened that door, I was going to hit him. And I already had the window picked out that I was going to dive out of. So he left. We got away. And it was, I guess, 3 or 4 weeks later that I finally surrendered. But the day I got saved, a couple of days after I got saved, I was telling that story to one of the men in prison, actually to a deputy. Another deputy was listening, and I was telling that story. He came over and he said, could I add something to this? And I said, sure. He said, I just want you to know that I was stationed outside that window. The sheriff had us stationed all around that house. We had the house surrounded, and I had orders to shoot anybody that came out any window. If anybody came out a window, you shoot them. Don't ask any questions. Just shoot. And so, as 100 times in my life, I can look back and see God's providence. God put that thought in my mind that day to leave that door open on that closet. If I hadn't left that door open, that sheriff had opened that door, I'd have hit him. I'd have dove out that window. And before I hit the ground, I would have been dead. I'm so thankful to God. You know, I mean, I was facing 99 years. I should have been dead. I should have never gotten out of prison. But I'm going to tell you, the Bible says that before the foundation of the world, God had a plan. I don't understand everything that God's done, but I know that looking back over my life, when everybody else wanted me dead, God had a plan for me. And I know before the foundation of the world, now that I look back on my life, I know God chose me. I can see all through my life times that God kept me from dying. I caused a man to get 5 years in prison when I was 15 years old. He did the 5 years and got out of prison and came back to my hometown with a pistol, a 44 Magnum, that long, to shoot me with. He spent almost a year in town waiting for the right day to kill me. And the night that he was going to kill me, I was fixing to pull into the driveway of a friend's house, and a cold chill went down my spine. And something told me to look, and I looked over to the left, and I saw Rusty's car.